That's right down the line there. I didn't reread the letter. Was that you? So what it said as to why we wanted you to come, I will. But we really have two main purposes. One is we want to express our appreciation and honor you for your financial support and encourage your continuing to help us in this area, as we'll talk about later. But also we would like, and you've been involved with us and helped us, and we want to be involved with you and minister to you and hopefully in some way help you in your ministry. So we talked about that last night and this morning about your ministry. Now comes the time for a report on what's going on in the Navigators. I suppose you could say that, apologies to the ladies, but the 3M company here, the Navigators, there are really three things that we need to keep our eye on in our work. One's the ministry, second's the men, and third's the money. So the ministry, the men, and that's in the broader sense than just the male sex, but it makes a nice alliteration. I don't mind what you call it, as long as it starts with M. It's like the essentials of our ministry. We call it evangelizing, establishing, and equipping, and I don't care what word you use as long as they start with E. So we're going to talk a little bit about a little report, not necessarily in that order, but as quickly as we can, an overview of the Navigator ministry today. We'll start, first of all, with our staff. And we have 331 representatives as of whenever this was put together here this month. That's the total. And this shows the growth. Is that in focus? Back there? Okay. The last 4 or 5 years. Of this 331, 34 are women representatives, incidentally. We've had about a 680% growth in women representatives over the last 4 or 5 years. But I think another thing is that the 331 is very significant. Was it 96 of these area representatives? And now these are the key people in our work, the staff people, are non-Americans. That's almost a third. And so that shows a very steady growth. And it gives you a little idea, too, of the development of the non-American or the overseas part of the Navigator work. Now, if along the line here you want to ask any questions, put your hand up. Why, just do it at the time. We have a total adult staff. In other words, the wives, the men, the wives, the support staff, secretaries, and so on, of just about 1,400 adults and of 26 nationalities. I think here at Glen Eyrie, you may think, and as a lot of our staff even do, especially overseas, that this is one big ball of wax. We actually have an international headquarters here plus the U.S. headquarters. And it surprises some to know that the total membership of the international headquarters here, I think, including secretaries, is 13. Where's Donald? Yeah. Am I correct there? And that includes Minister at Large, Leroy Imes, and also our staff counselor, George Sanchez. And, of course, the U.S. headquarters then, which is under Jack Mayhall and Bob Sheffield, naturally, with all its administrative requirements, occupies the major part of the facilities here. We are ministering officially in 34 countries. Now, didn't you say, Rod, there's somehow or other I can get light on this map, or maybe put those on?
Well, if you flip your orbit projector on and turn it,
we'll I see. How do you do that? I'm afraid I'll drop it. The more nervous I am, the more clumsy I get. So maybe you do that for me. I appreciate it. You mean just like that?
Oh, yeah. We have to take this up.
Okay, I'm through with that. You can throw that away. Oh, no, we'll keep that.
How does this work, Bob? Does it turn down? Oh, yeah, there we go. Is that a little better?
Does that help you or hinder you? Okay. I counted these all up, and this, I think, number is 33. If I have some mathematicians here, my notes tell me we're in 34 countries officially. The higher number sounds better, so we'll go with that. We are also operating unofficially in four or five other countries that would not appear here, such as Yugoslavia, Poland, East Germany, Romania, and let's see, we do have the Middle East listed. Some of these places where we operate, we do not have the addresses listed on the Navigator address list for obvious reasons. Since 1970, the last 7 years, we have entered 15 new countries officially. And that has caused us some problems, as you can imagine, and I'll mention that a little bit later. And because we've bitten off all we can chew and a little bit more, we have declared a moratorium on entering new countries officially, though I'll have to admit that the whole Navigator's back from new geography is like hanging on to some unbroken Mustangs because they really want to get out there. But there's where you need the young men and the old men together, and hopefully the young man's strength and the old man's gray hairs, they would work well together. One respects the others. During the last few years, we got kicked out of Uganda. We are withdrawing from Iran, and we had to leave Lebanon and are moving back in there officially right now. The largest staffs outside the U.S. would be, first of all, Great Britain with a total adult staff of 77. The next largest Navigator staff would be Holland, over here with 42. The next largest is New Zealand with 32. And the next is Australia with 30. And the next largest staff outside the U.S., pardon me, I had, it's New Zealand 32, Australia 31, and then the next largest is Canada with a full-time staff of 30 adults. We have now 12 countries in which the Navigator work is advanced enough to have sent at least one staff person out from that country as a missionary to some other part of the world. And that would be Australia and New Zealand, Singapore, Malaysia, and Japan in the Orient. Yes, I've got all those. And, of course, U.S., which is by far the largest sender, and Canada here. And over in Europe would be Britain, Holland, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. Interestingly enough, the only representative we have that's a Dane, has gone to Africa as a missionary, and we probably get more bang for our buck in Denmark, where we don't have any official staff, than we do unless it's in Burma, where we have less than that. And that's the kind of ministries we'd like to see multiplied. There are 9 countries which are in the investment stage. That means that they have yet to raise up their first disciple maker as of this date. And I'll switch this back. Any question to that point? That's just a little quickie over where we're operating in various parts of the world. If I can get this set up properly. Pull that up. Now, the Navigator ministry just simply is this. There are a number of ways that we can evaluate look at the Navigator ministry. Put that up a little higher. But if you took 2 Timothy 2:2, where it's Paul said to Timothy, "The things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, Timothy, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also." And if you use that as a little outline, the others also, you might put the equivalent to the result in the Navigator ministry of disciples. Now, in the Christian world, the word disciple is all the way from convert to a minor prophet. Depends on where you want to peg it. But we have what we call a profile of a disciple. And I think that you could say, in essence, that a disciple is still, to use this metal wheel that some of you remember that Doss took with him overseas, that a disciple is someone, first of all, that Christ is center and Lord of his life. It's someone who is continuing in the Word, and it's someone who's having a consistent prayer life. He's in fellowship with other believers and is seeking to reach out beyond himself to others to witness and communicate the gospel. We find that on the average, take a young collegiate or military, from the time of conversion till they grow and mature to meet what we call a navigator profile disciple, takes a year and a half to two. Then, for a person to become a disciple maker, that is where they in turn have reached out to somebody else and repeated the process, from conversion till they come to that point where they've done it takes about 3 years. There was an additional year. And then by a representative or a Timothy, that's somebody who's set apart from the regular pursuits of life to give full time to this ministry. And generally speaking, I think it's safe to say from the time of conversion till a person became a full-fledged representative would probably be 7 or 8 years. Would that be about true in the U.S., I guess, Jack? Donald overseas. I think that gives you a little time of the time span. Yet we haven't figured out a shortcut, nor have we found any spiritual pills that we can buy and feed people in which they can swallow and become the kind of people we're looking for in a hurry. They have to grow. Here's a little graph showing two result areas of a navigator ministry. And I think I'm probably standing where you can't. I'm going to stand back over here. Why that doesn't come through. Oh, I see. This has got to be pushed down. You can see those dots? Yeah, well, those dots are on the ears. There, it's beginning to come out. That up there hasn't come out either. Whoops. Sorry about this. As unaccustomed as I am to public speaking with visual aids. The significant thing here, these are new disciples. That's the kind that I said takes a year and a half to two to get. We start back here in 1969-70 because our ministry year runs from September 1 to August 31. And that fits the Northern Hemisphere, so that's the way we do it. You've got that year a production of nearly, well, about 1,200 new disciples. And that goes up pretty sharply to almost 3,000. Drops down to about 2,500 or a little, then about up to 27 and so on. Here, the disciple makers, we have that year, looks like about 300 up to 500, 600, 750. And here again, we have a leveling off and a dropping off of the last 3 years. But that gives you an idea of the key result areas in disciples and disciple makers. I think that a word of explanation you probably would like. First let me say this, that last year, the new disciple makers, the non-American ministries, accounted for 39% of these. And, 39% of the new disciples and 41% of the new disciple makers. And if you put that within your mind, the 96 non-American area representatives, it shows that the work overseas is really beginning to gather momentum. And of course, we're delighted about that. We feel that there's been a slack off here and a leveling, which has been quite a great concern to us. And we've studied this and we're working on this and trying to correct it. And some of the reasons are this. First of all, it was about here that we went into what's called the layman's or the community ministry. And without knowing what happened, we about way back in here, we had five of our staff giving full time to that ministry. And I think the latest count is we have well over 40. In fact, we have 43 or 49, I forget which it is, and maybe Jack can help us in the U.S. on that. And, of course, that's a startup time. There's also some problems to whether or not you can evaluate that on the same basis that you could others. Furthermore, we have 9 new countries that are right in here that are getting started, some of which, of course, started earlier, some not till later, and, of course, you have an investment without production as yet. Then something else we did. Up till this point, we asked all of our representatives to set goals in terms of numerical target figures, so many disciples, so many disciple makers. And there's been a lot of disquiet with that approach. I suppose disquiet may be a mild word. And so we dropped it. And so you'd simply report after the fact. And part of the picture here is that people tend to do what you inspect more than what you expect. And that does make a difference. There's also been a tightening of definitions of what we mean. Now, it seems like our requisites always creep up. And then I think in some areas there has been production, but a loss of the vision of reproduction that has contributed to this, and we're working on this. And also there's some matter of some leadership shifts. So that's, sorry about that graph here. It didn't come out a little better on that. Yes? Oh, you mean about inspecting?
No, not all of that.
The tightening of definitions? The loss of, oh, yes. A loss of vision of reproduction. We find in some places we go that there is a vision for production, but they haven't been reproducing leadership. And so while the man's tongue is hanging out with all the people he has around him, yet somehow or other he hasn't picked out the potential leadership and trained them to reproduce. And you aren't going to multiply unless you get it. That's that vision that I said earlier, alternately clears and blurs. Reproduction. Yes, it could. As I recall now, some of the fellows have felt that the time invested that year, or that spring, I think it was, in the development program did set the ministry back too. And that was, I forget what year that was.
74.
So that would be right. Yeah, right in here. Yes, the fellows felt that was part of it too. Thank you. Any other question on that? As far as the finances are concerned, I think you'd be interested to know that last year, and of course Rod will be going in this picture tonight with some of his displays and what it costs and the income, but last year $2 million of gift income came from outside the U.S., and which is very good. For instance, Holland is the... last year, their gift income was from Dutch was $437,000. The next highest overseas would be Australia. And then thirdly, in spite of their financial difficulties economically, Britain is third highest in giving in the Navigator world. Last April, the Navigators held a Europe Congress on Disciple Making. There were about 2,700 and some present at Essen, Germany. Young people, most all of whom are involved in the Navigator ministry in some way. Not only did about 1,000 of them stand, indicating they would go anywhere in the world for a Disciple Making ministry, but they also pledged over $100,000 over a 3-month period for missions. So the Europeans are, Navigators are giving to the Lord's work. And that's, of course, very, very encouraging. And Don, see here, Don Arvison, where's Don? Right over here. He was on the Free Church Mission Board member for about 4 years, till about a year ago. And he, as in some of the others of you know, how mission costs have risen astronomically in the last three or four years. And a couple of years ago, one of our fellows went to a mission conference, and there was a report made that they'd done a study on what it cost to raise up a national pastor or a native pastor. And they said they've discovered it costs more than it does to educate a brain surgeon. And it was such a big number that they suppressed the information. You know, I thought about that for a while, and I thought, what's wrong with that? I mean, what's more valuable, a brain surgeon or somebody who knows how to lead people to Christ? Now, we'd like to do it cheaper. But I thought, well, you get somebody who knows how to win people to Christ and build them up in the faith and get somebody else to do the same, I think that's a pretty valuable person. But the fact still remains that it is costly. And just to give you a little idea of our missionary staff as compared to the full-time adult staff in their home countries, here's a little chart that gives a picture on that. The home staffs here, for instance, right now on this chart was made up just this week of the full-time staff that I mentioned, 1,069 are serving in their home country. We have 311 navigator staff people serving outside their home country. And you will notice here a steady decline down through here. We've had to do some serious tightening up because of the financial situation. We've had to cancel some people's going to the mission field on account of the financial situation. And also, and I think this is fair to say it, but I like to say it properly, and that is that people have come home from the mission field for various reasons, and some because really they weren't best suited for missionaries. And I think, Jack, of the U.S., we've had about, as I recall, 28 missionary families return in 3 years, something like that. So that there has been a very careful consideration here. And furthermore, we're learning that about one out of three area representatives, you might say, is a missionary type. And one of the things they do now, all missionary candidates go through the Toronto Institute for a month where they're tested on their aptitudes, the missionary language aptitude, etc., so that we can be careful because it is getting very expensive. However, I'd like to say, in addition to this, that while we have a moratorium on new countries and we are now beefing up where we are operating. We have right now 135 approved missionary staff slots for the next 2 years. So this figure is going to go up. And 76 of those 135 slots have candidates offered already, and 51 are already selected. So that'll give you a little picture that that's moving up. And, of course, what we're trying to do is to develop more countries to get a more advanced ministry so they're not only self-sustaining but can be sending more and more missionaries so we can have more non-Americans going out as missionaries, supported by their own countries, which gives us an immense amount of flexibility in the mission program. And also we're developing some new approaches. Our ministry in Eastern Europe that's been going on now for a couple of years, and the Hages have a daughter and son-in-law that are involved in that ministry, and which is very exciting, is teaching us approaches to the missionary work. In my personal opinion, the way the world is going, we're going to be adopting in a lot more places in the world than just Eastern Europe. And that's a whole thing in itself. For instance, we're working through Christians in these countries. There are Dutch businessmen trained as navigators who go into Eastern Europe either on business or vacations to help minister to these people. There are Swedish teachers who have been trained in the navigator ministry who take their summer vacations, camping trips, go into these countries and make contact and help these people. So there are various ways to help minister there without their localizing it to one person. So that kind of thing is moving on. We are beginning now to do the same thing relative to the Chinese mainland. We have found, for instance, that there are about 20,000 Hong Kong Chinese students in U.S. and Canada, most of whom have a little card that tells them they can go back and forth across the border to the mainland. One of our navigator staff, former navigator staff, a Chinese, Samuel Chun, who now has a Presbyterian church in Hong Kong, has five members of his church that regularly go back and forth to mainland China out of Hong Kong. And Jim Downing was just out there doing some investigating on some things that we're working out to have a ministry in the mainland of China now, not 15 years from now. And of course, that's the kind of a thing that will not come out in the log or mailing list or whatever. Then Jack will be telling you a little bit later about another approach to missions from the States, something that we have going on. Now, any question at this point? I'll just summarize to say that I think our main strengths are, first of all, our staff. God's given us this good staff, but not just the staff, but the staff in relationship to what we call a basic workforce. That is people who are not on the staff, but who are themselves our disciple makers and are involved in the forwarding of this ministry. And that is a very key figure. And this is the way that looks. Here, this is representatives to workforce. And you can see 242 reps. Now, I must say that they are included in the figure of 1872. We should have kept them separate. But this is workforce has been growing. These are, and except you subtract 331 out of this, and you've got the number of non-staff disciple makers who are directly involved with us in this ministry. And that approach is 10 to 1. And that's the kind of a ratio we want to see, only we want even more. And it's coming to the place, well, it already is, where it's not going to be possible to count and evaluate the various spin-offs. But this does give us some idea of how well we're doing in involving others in the ministry. That would be from all the areas of ministries. I'm told that we're operating in 34 countries and in 504 what you call, might call ministry, what do we call it, ministry spots, ministry, the word escapes me. But yes, that would include all. And I would presume, see, that's a little hard to count. There may be people who are involved, maybe partly, it gets a little fuzzy out there, but still it does give us some indication of how we're doing. And we've got to do it. There's no other way.
Can you define who basic workforce
would be? Yes, it'd be anybody who's involved in our ministry who is a disciple maker and up. That is disciple maker, team leader, contact point, or staff. That, I think, is a strong point. And that needs to develop, and we're working on it. Another strength, I think, the number of non-Americans coming up. I showed you that. We've got some really top-notch leadership. Japan, Korea. Korea, we've got five top-notch Korean reps with five more strong guys coming up and behind them and 10 more behind that. That looks very good, for instance. Singapore looks good. There are other places that really looks good. That, in turn, is creating new challenges for us as to how do you organize it, how do you lead it, how do we keep going in the same direction. But we're finding some answers to prayer and the results of the investment of a lifetime of a missionary to be willing to be the link in the chain to lay the foundations of many generations. So I don't know how long the Lord will let me live, but I tell you, if just a little bit longer, we're going to see that line going up. It's going to really zip. That is assuming we can count. That's getting to be a problem, too. Maybe we don't have to. Except we are responsible to the Lord to do the best we can to be good stewards of the personnel and the money that He's entrusted to us, and to see that we're getting the results that we should. So we have to evaluate. Some degree of know-how, I think, is a strength. And I think one of the most encouraging things to me in the last few years is on the part of our staff that's maturing. A lot of our middle leadership is about 40 now. But is a better concept of the body of Christ and our relationship to it, which in turn will make us much more relevant in our ministry. And I think that is a growing strength. Weaknesses, I'll mention three. Number one, we are weak in top leadership. And maybe you could just tell that by looking, I don't know. But we think, for instance, we've got several reasons. We've got too much geography to cover. In some cases, the Peter principle. Other cases, the gifts and calling. A number of cases of family situations dictate whether or not a person can be in a place of leadership or not because of health, and there have to be transfers. But right now, we really need prayer as to God's choice in some real key leadership spots. Another thing is that I feel, perhaps more than anybody else, that the centrifugal forces at work in this world, to take this work in 32 countries and blow it apart, are really strong. Somebody asked me the other day, do I think once some country will just go off by itself? I think it's inevitable. There's no way to hold them together. You take the Dutch navigators, they can just say, we have no way to hang on to them other than their sufferance. They've got their money, their own board of directors, they got their own staff, they got their own everything. And maybe they shouldn't be part of this. But all I'm saying is that don't be surprised, you know, say, well, yes, we had a work in Holland. They've gone off on their own. Right now, they're challenging the rest of us. I think that there's culture, and I sometimes think a lot too much made of that, nationalism, economics, the poor and the rich, politics, theology, and the perverseness of human nature, all of which combine to really put a lot of strains on a work in 32 countries that you're trying to hold together and move in one direction. And how to manage a multinational, international work is one of our biggest problems. Or should it be? Dr. Peters of the Dallas Seminary, their missions man, says that what we're trying to do can't be done without killing off the leadership. Well, we'll find out. Someone said to me, Sandy, you're going to kill yourself off. I said, well, I tell you what, you tell them. If I kick off one of these days, you tell them this, that I may not have lived as long as some, but I will have lived more than most. And if there's anybody who didn't live as long as some, that's Doss, died at 50, but he lived more than most. So, I know you got to take care of yourself, but at the same time, we lived a couple of lifetimes already, and it's been terrific. Another thing is finances. We don't have a margin on finances. We're operating pretty close. Well, Rod will tell you about that tonight. Not only not up to budget, but no margin. And I got a friend who keeps telling me you've got to operate on the margin, spiritually, physically, emotionally, and financially. And so that's a weakness. Any question? Okay, we'll stand up for a moment, and we're going to turn it over to Jack Mayhall, and he'll bring you up to date on the work in the U.S. Stand up. Somehow or other, this is an illustration. I'll use South America as an illustration. This is a little private group here, and this particular cassette, I just didn't get out. People do what you inspect, not just what you expect. Okay, so you say, now look, tell us how many representatives you have coming up so that we can know what missionaries might be available and so on. If that's all you ask for, then that's all they think you want. So then the ministry narrows to just looking for area representative types. So we say, look, the central part of the movement is disciple makers. We'd like to know how you're doing in disciple makers. Fine. So we go round up all the Christians we can and make disciple makers out of them. And we find that evangelism is not there. So we say, all right, look, we'd like to know about converts too. Well, somehow or other, for some national workers to think that I, Lauren Sanney, and the Colorado Springs Colossus would want to know the number of converts in his ministry or disciples in a given year just blows his mind. It's a paper tiger that blows up the size of this room. I don't think I'm exaggerating too much because I've just been down there helping to deflate the paper tigers. And yet somehow or other it doesn't bother them to send that information to Campinas, Brazil. So I said, all right, Jim Peterson, you're our director down there. Our headquarters for all of Latin America is in Campinas, Brazil. Jim, I'll expect you to know about converts and disciples in every one of those countries and every one of those ministries. Is that fair? Fair enough. Fine. Then at a later date, I'll just turn around and ask Jim Peterson. So, with that same concept and for other reasons, we're going to set up our Asian headquarters in Hong Kong so that all Asian affairs go to an Asian address, not to a Western address, either Christchurch, New Zealand, or Colorado Springs. The same for Europe, and then we're going to get the same for Africa. So that it just diffuses a lot of things right there, we found by experience. So, right. Thanks for the question. Well, now, Jack Mayhall is maybe you don't know Jack, he's a graduate of Wheaton College, Dallas Seminary. Subsequent to that, had a ministry as a youth pastor back in the Midwest. He was assistant to Dr. Jack Mitchell there in youth work in Portland, Oregon for a while. Came with the NAVS, directed a servicemen's center in Long Beach. Came back here for a bit, went back to the Midwest and started from scratch with an area ministry, developed that into a regional ministry, and then in turn was developed into a divisional ministry. And now Jack has the responsibility as a director for our work in the U.S. And so Jack will tell you what's going on in the U.S. part of the work. Jack?
I'm sure that you realize... trying to give a report after the president has given a report is not the easiest assignment in the world. It's a little bit like trying to find where the 500-pound gorilla slept, and you all know where the 500-pound gorilla slept. Anywhere he wants to. So that's about the way I feel right now. I'm a little nervous, but we'll press ahead. I think probably the most exciting and thrilling experience that Carol and I have ever had in the ministry has been the last 4 years here in Colorado Springs working alongside of Lauren Sanney, the 500-pound gorilla, and that's no reflection in terms of weight because I know he's on a diet. But it really has been a very enriching and growing experience for us to work that closely with Lauren. We respect him very highly. We think a great deal of both him and Lucy. And it's been one of the highlights of our life the last 4 years to work with them here. Back in early May of 1956, we were living in Portland, Oregon at the time, and I received a letter from Dawson Troutman inviting me to attend a pastor's conference here at Glen Eyrie, and in the process of being here for that week, discuss with him further the possibility of our coming on the Navigator staff. I had met Doss about a year prior to that time. He had been through Portland, and we had chatted, and in the process of our one-hour discussion, he had mentioned something about the possibility of someday our coming on the Nav staff. I didn't think too much about it at that particular time. Later on, God began to work in our hearts, and I knew that there was a change coming, didn't know what it was, but I wrote to Doss and asked him if there's some way that we could get together and talk about it further. I received this letter. He invited me to come, and so the last week in May of 1956, I climbed on an airplane, flew to Colorado Springs, and spent that week here. Had many hours with Doss. One afternoon, Thursday afternoon of that week, I remember, we spent the whole afternoon together over in the large bedroom of the Pink House, on this end of the Pink House. And that was where he and Lila were staying. And he took about 5 hours and gave me an overview of the Navigator ministry both here in the U.S. and a little bit of history of how we had operated overseas up until that time. That night I walked around the island being the thing out here in the middle of the glen that the road goes around, that 0.6 mile for you joggers, in case you want to know. And the roads were not paved in those days. It was dusty and gravelly. And I went around about 10 times that night praying about what the Lord would have us do. And the longer I prayed, the more convinced I became that God wanted us to leave the church that we were in Portland, Oregon, and come on the staff of the Navigators. We didn't know what that meant. So the next morning, I walked into Doss's office and sat down with him, and we began to talk about it. And I said, "Well, Doss, I feel we ought to come on the staff of the Navigators." He said, "Fine, I figured that's what you would do. We'd like to have you go to Long Beach, California, and direct the Long Beach Servicemen Center." I said, "I've never been in the military. I don't know anything about it." He says, "Well, that's where we need you right now, and that's where we'd like to have you go." And so I began to argue with him about how lousy an idea that was. I didn't use those terms. But I learned something. I didn't know Doss all that well, but I learned something that afternoon, and that is you probably can never win an argument with him. And the way he settled the issue was, because I was contending for the fact that I needed some training from the Navigators. I need to come here to Glen Eyrie and get some help and learn how to do a Navigator ministry. I'd only been in touch with him for about 1.5 years at that time, and had some time with Skip Gray and with Doug Coe and a little contact with Leroy Imes. But all that time, I was a youth director in a church up in Portland. And finally, he settled the argument by making this statement. He said, "We want you to go to Long Beach, Jack, and run the Long Beach Servicemen Center. You know enough to start." And he was right. I did. I knew enough to start. That was about all. But so we moved to Long Beach. And I learned what all these stripes on guys' sleeves meant, and the various ranks, and how to begin to talk to sailors about Jesus Christ. And it was an exciting 2 years that we had there. And as Lauren mentioned, we came back, spent a little over 1 year here at Glen Eyrie, and then one day he asked us to pray about going to the Chicago area and moving to Wheaton, which we did. Our basic instructions upon going back to the Chicago area was, go back there, get a ministry started, and get some men. We do it different now. But that's all about all we knew to do in those days. In those days, we didn't have a collegiate ministry. We had a pretty good military ministry going. But for the most part, our ministry in the early 60s and late 50s was merely to send a man to a major metropolitan area and let him figure it out. All we knew that was we wanted to get some men, the kind of men that Lauren has been talking about, laborers for the cause of Jesus Christ. And so we moved back to the Wheaton area, found a little apartment, and got going in exploring some avenues of ministry. And God, in a very unique and wonderful way, led us into the collegiate ministry through the avenue of 3 or 4 different universities right around in the western part, western suburbs of the Chicago area. At that time, Leroy Imes had just become the U.S. director, and he had a burden to get us on the college campus. And so Leroy would come through, and he would say, "Let's go over to Northern Illinois University," and we'd go over and spend the day on the campus, and he would take me out by the hand and show me how to get a ministry started on the campus. And then I, in turn, would turn around and do the same thing and pretended like I knew all about it, and I just learned from Leroy. About 3 years later, in 1962, the ministry had grown somewhat. We had some good men around. We had ministries going at Indiana University, the University of Illinois, Northern Illinois University, and two or three others. And I got a letter from Lauren asking if we could have the annual Area Representatives Conference in Chicago that year, 1962, early 1962. And I said, sure, we'd be delighted to have you. So two or three of us got our heads together and tried to figure out where we should have this thing at the least amount of cost, with the greatest amount of productiveness and the best amount of fellowship. And we had just moved in to a large 12-room home. We had four guys and two couples living with us. So we decided that we would have the Area Reps Conference in our home. And we did. We moved everybody out. We moved in bunk beds. And we had all of the area representatives in the United States in our home for a week for a conference in 1962, in the dead winter of January. There were 25 of us. That represented every area representative we could scrounge around the U.S., including everybody here at headquarters, Lauren Sanney, Jim Downing, Rod Sargent. We were all there. Now, folks, that was 15 years ago. Today, we have 940 American staff scattered around the world. That's including wives. In some 26 or 27 different countries where there are Americans. And in addition to that, counting the people that are involved in this basic workforce that Lauren was talking about, in addition to the staff, some 600 others who are, for the most part, contributing their efforts to the work of the NAV ministry. I personally look back on the last 15 years as a fantastic growth rate, the hand of God blessing us and giving us the kind of people as well as the number of people that He has. Back there in those days in the early 60s, when I would take a trip, for instance, down to the University of Indiana, where Dave Johnson was working at that time, I remember one particular situation. Dave had written and he said, we want to have a fraternity meeting. Well now, folks, I graduated from a college that was a small Christian liberal arts school back west of Chicago called Wheaton. I had never been on a secular campus except two or three times in my life. One of those times was when my dad took us down, a bunch of us down to the University of Illinois to see Notre Dame play Illinois when I was in high school. I had never been in a fraternity in my life. And here Dave Johnson writes and said he'd like to have a fraternity meeting, and he wanted me to speak. So I wrote to Leroy in desperation, how do you have a fraternity meeting? And I got this big manila envelope back from him about a week later. It had a ream of material in it about that thick, and it had the whole layout of how to set up and how to run and how to have a fraternity meeting, including the message that you were supposed to give, word for word. So I wrote Dave back and I said, great, you set it up, I'll be there. And in my letter to him, I said, now here's some of the things you ought to keep in mind that you need to do in setting up this fraternity meeting. And I passed on to him, in my own words, the stuff that Leroy had sent to me. And all the way down, as I drove from Chicago down to Indiana University, I was memorizing that message, word for word, about 3.5 pages full. And when I got there on the scene, I pretended like, you know, this was just like falling off a log. Man, those guys never knew that I had never been in a fraternity meeting. They never knew that I had never been in a fraternity. But brother, I'll tell you, I prayed. And Dave emceed the thing, I spoke, and we had two of the guys give a testimony. And as a result of that meeting, about six guys trusted Christ the next day. And man, you talk about excited. You talk about a turned-on bunch of fellas down at Indiana University. And you talk about me being excited. We don't do it that way anymore. We give guys a lot better training than that. For instance, at the University of Illinois in Champaign right now, The ministry has grown there to the place where right now, on the campus at the University of Illinois, we are in touch with at least 10% of the student body and have an inroad to them on a spiritual basis in some way or another. Now, that happens because we have set up a training center there at the University of Illinois, which we will bring young potential staff guys into it, and most of them are married. We will have them there for 2 or 3 years, and we will give them intensive indoctrination and training, on-the-job training. They will have the responsibility for a whole section of the campus, maybe 4 or 5 dormitories, 6 or 7,000 students in dormitories. And we will give them intensive training for 2 or 3 years on how to do a collegiate ministry. God has led us over the years and helped us to figure this out of what are the best ways to carry on a collegiate ministry. And how to strategize it, the philosophy behind it, the tactics that can be used in various ways and shapes and forms to reach students for Christ and see them come to be disciples for Him. And I have a personal interest in that right now because our daughter and her husband, Tim and Lynn Westberg, are in training there at the University of Illinois. Next year they go into their 3rd year. Tim is assistant director of a training program this summer down in St. Louis. And every time we get together with them, I am absolutely astounded and thrilled with the kind of training that my daughter and her husband are getting in order to prepare them for a lifetime of service for the cause of Jesus Christ in the NAV ministry somewhere in the world. So I've got a vested interest in this, and I'm excited about what God is teaching us in this matter of training people for the ministry. And we're learning new things all the time and developing our techniques. We haven't perfected it yet. As Lauren has mentioned, let me just get into some of the technical ramifications of this right now. As far as the U.S. is concerned, the ministry, the production in the ministry over the last 3 years has dropped off. In other words, the line, instead of going up like this, has leveled off. And he gave you a number of reasons as to why this has happened. It's not only true in the U.S., but it's true worldwide. But in the U.S., the primary reason that we have, as we've analyzed this situation, is because of our entrance into the community ministry, which is a ministry, as many of you know, with laymen, particularly focusing on young couples. It's a new thing for us. We have been dabbling at it for a number of years, but we have finally committed ourselves to it within the last 5 years, and we are convinced that God wants us in this. Well, 6 years ago, I was talking to Ed Rice just a few months ago about this. 6 years ago, we had about 15 people involved in what we could call the community ministry on the Navigator staff worldwide. Less than half of those were in the United States. This was 6 years ago. 15 people full-time in the community ministry all over the world, Australia, New Zealand, Holland, Great Britain. Those were the major ones where we had staff doing this, as well as in the United States. Today, in the United States, we have 76 full-time people in the community ministry. Most of that has happened in the last 3 years. Now, that's an awful rapid buildup. For the Navigators, that's an awful rapid buildup. To take that many staff and move into a brand new ministry that rapidly. Now, in order to do that, what we have had to do is we've had to take many of those staff out of another type of ministry and plug them into a community ministry. Some of our missionaries that Lauren talked about who have come home from the mission field and for one reason or another are not able to go back, they have been tied into the community ministry. Well, as I said, we're still feeling our way along in this. We're learning new lessons all the time about it. We're trying to figure it out. It's a lot more complicated type of ministry than either the collegiate or the military. There are a lot more things that have to be taken into consideration when you're working with a married couple and he's got a job and he works full time and they've got kids and they've got other commitments. That's a lot more complicating factors than you have in just getting a hold of a college kid on a campus or a guy who's in the military. and we're learning. But it has hurt our production, the process of getting into it this rapidly. And as a result of it, when I was together last February with the regional directors here in the United States, and we talked about this situation, we have decided that we feel that for the next 18 months, that is from the beginning of this calendar year until the fall of 78, we need to slow down our move into the community ministry as far as putting staff into it. And so we're doing that in order to give us some breathing room, some time to figure some things out and get more on track with what we are doing in the community ministry. Also, as Lauren mentioned, one of our major areas of need right now, not only worldwide, but this is particularly true in the United States, is our leadership situation, particularly at the top. In the last 16 months in the United States, we, for one reason or another, have lost three of our regional directors. Now, having said that, let me give you just a quick overview of how we are organizationally structured in the United States. We have six regions, geographical regions in the United States. The Northeast region includes Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia, and then everything up through New England. The Southeast region is the North Carolina-Tennessee border down the Mississippi and everything southeast of that. That's the Southeast region. The Midwest region includes Indiana, Michigan, all the way over Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, North and South Dakota, and everything in there. The Southwest region is Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, and Oklahoma. The Western region runs from Arizona, New Mexico, all the way up the Nevada border, and everything in that area. And then the California-Nevada region. Now, we are in the process of rethinking that structure, but that is the way we are structured right now. 16 months ago, we had six regional directors, each one responsible for one of those regions. We now have three. We're hurting. Under each of those regional directors, there are what we call state directors, and a state director may have one or two or three states or a part of a state. We have about 35 state directors in the United States. And beginning tomorrow night, all of those men will be here at the Glen, and we're having a 3.5-day conference with all of them on the subject of leadership, which is a very key issue right now in my thinking. Now, how do you handle six regions with three regional directors? That's a good question that I'm trying to figure out right now. And right now, we're band-aiding just a little bit to give us a little time. I'm meeting with the regional directors are coming in tonight, and I'm meeting all day tomorrow with them, and one of our major items on the agenda for discussion tomorrow is how are we going to handle some of these leadership situations that we have in the United States. Hopefully, we can come up with some alternatives or an alternative that will enable us to posture ourselves in such a way that we can meet the needs that we see 4 or 5 years down the road. In other words, to avoid just a band-aid situation for the present if we can, and go to a structure that will lead us into something that is desirable 4 or 5 years from now. And we've got some ideas and thinking on that. So that's one of the major items that we'll be discussing tomorrow with the regional directors. And we would appreciate your prayer on this. Now, I am really concerned about this whole matter of leadership, top leadership in the Navigators. Someone may ask the question, well, how did you get yourself in this bind? Well, there are a number of reasons for it, not the least of which is we've sent an awful lot of them overseas. If I could get back two or three of the guys that we've sent overseas in the last 5 years, we'd be in Fat City in the United States as far as top leadership is concerned. But we can't do that. We feel that God led us. In the past, those guys are carrying a major load overseas, and so we've got to come up with new men. Now, one of our first steps in the development of some leadership is this conference that we're having this week with all of our state directors. And the thing that I have been praying for that God will use this conference in doing is to give us a handful of those guys who will really commit themselves to becoming the kind of man God wants them to be in terms of spiritual leadership. And they will be willing to climb any mountain, pay any price, do anything that God asks them to do to become the kind of leader that we need, not only here in the United States, but worldwide. Then in addition to that, we're planning a series of this type of thing over the next 3 years. We'll have another one next spring and then about every 9 months from then on. And then in addition to that, we have already identified the top three or four guys in the United States that we feel are just about ready to take major roles of leadership, and we are, in the next year or two, are going to give them some special grooming in order to get them into a major role of leadership as quickly as we possibly can, but without doing it too rapidly. They do need some polishing, and we want to make sure that we do an adequate job. We've learned some lessons the hard way in putting men into responsibility before they're ready for it, and we have problems later on. Sometimes you pay a pretty heavy price when you do that. The grassroots ministry is very encouraging. Our missionary sending program is very encouraging. For instance, this fiscal year, from September 1, 76 to August 31 of 77, we will send from the United States 37 people overseas, full-time missionaries of one kind or another. Next year, we are anticipating sending 46. Now, as Lauren mentioned, we are running into to more and more problems in getting people overseas, not the least of which is the financial angle. Sometimes when we look at the budget of what it's going to cost us to send a missionary to a particular given country, it's just, you know, it just blows your mind. And yet every figure can be verified, and it's just so expensive. The inflation rate in many countries overseas these days is just astronomical, 40-50% in many countries a year. With that in mind, about 8 months ago, we launched a new experimental program we're calling Missionary Associates. We've got a man here at the Glen who is very qualified and equipped to handle this type of thing. His name is Bill Threlkeld. He's a PhD in the field of communications, graduated from the University of Tennessee, is a retired Air Force major. And the deeper Bill has gotten into this, the more exciting we have become about it and that he has become about it. And basically what it is, it's finding ways of getting some of these people who are in our basic workforce, who are college graduates, out of the military, young business people, into jobs overseas that either the government will pay their salary and their trip over and back, or some company will, or a school will. Thus far, we have found that the academic world is probably the most open to us, getting people over in teaching positions. Just earlier this summer, we had a young couple leave for Malaysia, and they will be in Kuala Lumpur teaching in a government school, but working alongside of Paul Hensley in the ministry there in Malaysia. And the Malaysian government pays for the whole thing. It doesn't cost the navigators a cent. But they have come out, this young couple has come out of our ministry. Right now, we have, two or three...